Good afternoon. Thank you, Dr. Irvin, for that introduction. Thank you for your attendance after lunch here. The focus of this research is trying to validate an alternative irrigation method that will be more efficient than overhead irrigation, and also trying to validate an alternative irrigation water source for irrigation. In the desert southwest in recent years, it's been an extreme focus on water conservation. And however, in more water-rich regions, it has not, until recently, where we've seen some droughts like we saw in Georgia in 2007, and also at more localized scales. And oftentimes, when you see these localized droughts, you begin to see restrictions on turfgrass irrigation. And what EPA has done with this is created a WaterSense program, which is trying to conserve the nation's water for the future. And one of the things they're looking at is targeting turfgrass during these drought conditions and restricting its water usage in residential areas. And some of our research, what we're going to be looking at, is using subsurface drip irrigation as an alternative use, and also using harvested rainwater for irrigation. And drip irrigation has a number of benefits. The first one, oftentimes it operates at lower operating pressures than your overhead systems. And also, many times can be comparable in cost during installation, and over the long term as you use the system, it becomes even more beneficial. And these subsurface drip systems, because you're applying the water below the surface, you'll have lower surface moisture, disease pressure, and can also promote rooting growth. And because of that lower soil moisture on the surface, you can decrease your weed germination, evaporation, you'll be eliminating overspray, and possibly the one of most beneficial parts is a possible water savings from using drip irrigation. And the objectives of this study were, one, to demonstrate rainwater harvesting in Madison, Wisconsin. And the second, with the subsurface drip irrigation, was to identify the proper depth and spacing. And we would do that by measuring soil moisture and soil moisture uniformity, and also turf color and quality. And once we took these measurements in the field, we wanted to compare this with a computer program to possibly predict where that moisture would be after an irrigation event. And we'd be using Hydrus 2D to do this. And Hydrus is a computer program that will model subsurface water flow vertically and horizontally through irrigation events. And this was the materials and methods for our rainwater harvesting system. And it occurred in Madison, Wisconsin. And we were harvesting water from a 655 square meter rooftop and filtering that water before those collection tanks. And each one of those collection tanks were 15 cubic meters. Once these tanks were full, that would allow us to irrigate approximately 2.5 centimeters weekly for about 1 month without any rainfall. And once that water was collected, we would distribute that into our drip irrigation system. And here we have 21 plots, all being 5 by 3 meters, and with treatments of depth at 12, 25 centimeters, and spacings at 30, 45, and 61 centimeters. And we had treatments that combined each one of these depths and spacings, replicated 3 times, and we also included 3 non-irrigated control plots. And it was set up in an incomplete block design and installed a year ago into an existing Kentucky bluegrass lawn over a silt loam soil. And we collected data on those plots, beginning with soil moisture, using a time domain reflectometer with 12 centimeter probes. And we took measurements in the center of each plot on a 1.2 by 1.2 meter grid. And over the 21 plots, being 49 measurements per plot, it was 1,029 readings weekly. And we also measured turfgrass color using a CM1000 reflectometer, turfgrass quality on a 1-9 scale, 6 being acceptable. And then we also generated these computer models using Hydrus 2D to compare them. And it's important to note that in Madison, Wisconsin, we received substantial rainfall during parts of the summer. And in 2008, we noticed a period through August and September in which ET exceeded precipitation by approximately 6 centimeters. And this period in 2008 is where we'll be focusing our data and our results today. And we saw a very similar period in 2009, approximately 4 weeks through the end of August and September, where once again we weren't receiving precipitation and ET was exceeding that value. So like I mentioned before, we'll be focusing just on that drought period. And it's important to note that when we did run the statistics, we found a very significant difference between what I'm going to be describing as the wet periods and the dry periods, where we're seeing those drought conditions. And we also combined our seasons, the drought period in 2008 and the drought period in 2009. We combined that data and analyzed them together to evaluate the effects that we saw with our depth and our spacing interactions. And here's a quick photograph of two of the plots. The first photograph on the left is demonstrating some of the striping that we'll talk about a little bit later from what happens when you have your spacings a bit far apart. The photograph on the right is just demonstrating a control plot towards the end of these drought periods where these non-irrigated controls are starting to become dormant. Here is a photograph of some of the data collection for soil moisture. That grid represents the 49 placements where we took soil moisture within each plot, resulting in those 1,029 measurements each week. When we analyzed that data within the plots, we noticed, of course, that the non-irrigated controls exhibited a much lower soil moisture than any of our irrigated plots, and also that the spacings of 30 and 45 represented some of the best soil moisture values in the plots over the two dry periods. And we took those moisture readings from each plot and we created a spatial distribution showing that soil moisture. And this plot here represents a 25 centimeter spacing, or excuse me, 25 centimeter depth and 30 centimeter spacing. And those black lines are representing drip emitters that are below the surface. And you'll notice there's no correlation between soil moisture and the drip emitters that run through that plot. And the overall uniformity of that plot is 87%. We'll compare this to a plot at a 12 centimeter depth and 61 centimeter spacing, and where you'll notice that between those emitter lines, you'll notice a distinct difference in soil moisture. And that's possibly why that photograph we saw earlier, you're starting to see that turf color striping resulting in a decline in turf quality. And the overall uniformity of this plot being 82%, 5 percentage points lower than the previous. And this is also demonstrated by looking at the soil moisture. It's important to note here that the uniformity of the control plots represented by the spacing of zero, it is actually the dry soil moisture. We weren't irrigating those plots. And we'll compare this to the uniformity of, again, the 30 and 45 centimeter spacings, which exhibited some of the best uniformity of soil moisture. And these next few photographs, we're going to, if everybody can kind of remember what these look at, because the next few won't be quite as clear, but these are overhead photographs of the plot area, the one on the left being slightly different than the one on the right, but still the same plot area. We took these photos and we're using infrared images to try and determine the temperature of the turf grass, which was representing a moisture stress that we were seeing. And the scale in the center of this picture represents the white and yellow being approximately 40 and 41 degrees Celsius, and also the more blue and dark colored being approximately 22 degrees Celsius. And you'll notice the control plots being very white and relatively yellow, representing temperatures around above 38 degrees Celsius. And these plots at the time were receiving quality ratings of approximately 4.5, below acceptable quality. And also all of the other ones, all of the other plots, the 61 centimeters and 30 centimeter spacings, you can see some of the purple and orange colors showing that temperatures are below 28 oftentimes or near 32 degrees. And all of these other plots, other than the unirrigated controls, are receiving values around 8 and 8.5. And you'll also notice at the 61 centimeter spacing, you can see some of that striping that we've talked about a few slides ago, where you're seeing that temperature difference being much higher between those emitter lines. And so now we saw in the field, we started to see some of this striping in the turf grass over time in the 61 centimeter spacing plots, but it wasn't evident in some of the 30 and 45 centimeter spacings. And if you were going to put drip irrigation in any turf grass landscape, you'd want to be able to predict and avoid that. And so what we tried to do and what we did with the Hydrus 2D was evaluate some of that prior to putting equipment in the field. And what we're looking at here is on the left is the domain in Hydrus representing a 25 centimeter depth and 45 centimeter spacing compared to the one on the right, which is a 61 centimeter spacing at the same depth. And the colors for moisture here are a bit non-intuitive, but the 40.43 being the highest moisture content is actually going to be in red in the next few slides, and the lower moisture will be in blue. And we're beginning here at 20% soil moisture with your emitters being located at each one of those X's. So you can imagine between those emitters would be the midway point where we may see striping in that 61 centimeters. And your values in each one of those domains, 31 centimeters per hour, was the flux rate of water through those emitters. And those rates of water discharge represent the same amount of water that was put through those drip emitters in the field. And at time, 1.5 hours, you'll notice that irrigation events have commenced, and the soil moisture around those emitters is higher than away from those emitters in those spacings. And at time 7 hours, which is approximately 2 hours after the irrigation event, which we put out 2.5 centimeters of water, you'll notice that the photograph on the left, you see fairly good moisture uniformity across the surface of that profile. Whereas the one on the right, you'll notice in the upper part of that region on the surface, you're seeing a soil moisture difference of approximately 10% between those emitters. And that 10% difference is what was causing that difference in color and quality of turf grass, creating that striping effect during those dry periods. And here is a very similar thing from hydrus, this one being a difference in depth. And this one here, you notice at the 12 centimeter depth compared to the 25, that we don't see quite the same dramatic effect of striping, being that those emitters are slightly closer to the surface, and that difference in soil moisture near the surface between emitters at a 61 centimeter spacing is only a few percentage points. And so basically what we concluded with the harvesting rainwater system in Madison, Wisconsin, we harvested over 220 cubic meters of water in approximately 8 months. And over the two seasons, we did not have to rely on any potable water, it being either groundwater or surface water, to irrigate our plots. And also in a silt loam soil in Madison over those 2 years, any depth and spacing provided good turf grass quality over time, except for that 61 centimeter spacing during those dry periods. And the Hydrus 2D did accurately predict what we were finding in the field and could be a great tool for determining where you want to put those drip emitters as your soil properties change, possibly as your turf plants change, but can be a great tool for possibly industry and or homeowners in creating accurate placement of drip emitters for turf grass areas. And so with that, you can, you know, hopefully do some more measurements in the field determining proper depths, comparing it with hydrus, with different soil types specifically, but also maybe different products and different depths and spacing of emitters. And with that, I'd like to acknowledge some of my fundraising with my fellowship, Terry and Kathleen Kurth in Wisconsin, and also the WGIF out of Wisconsin, and my committee. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Got plenty of time for questions.
Sorry, I missed it. Which brand of drip system did you use? What brand of lines?
All of the drip lines were Netafim products.
And the spacing on the emitters on the
So the spacing on the emitters, for anything that was either 30, 45, or 61, that would be the spacing between the emitter lines and also the spacing between the emitters within the line.
So you actually have different spacing of emitters on the line?
Correct.
During drought times, maybe I missed it, how did you schedule the irrigation?
So the question was, during drought times, how did we schedule the irrigation events? And it was basically off of a quality rating. As we began to see quality ratings drop, we would irrigate, try not to excess that 2.5 centimeters per week. Yes.
On your run times, you mentioned that you gave a certain amount of water. I forgot what the number was. But did you actually look at, did you give that water as a kind of a pulsing event or just as a one-time consistent run time?
So the question was, with our irrigation events, were we pulsing that irrigation event or just running it? And those events were just a straight run through of irrigation.
Did you measure the actual amount of water you applied to each plot based on the spacing and depth and whether they exceeded ET or they were below ET or what percentage of ET did you apply to each plot?
So the question was, how much water were we applying in excess of ET when we had those irrigation events? And oftentimes we were exceeding ET, and most of that was because our drip irrigation system was connected with that rainwater harvesting system, And even during the wet period, we would irrigate to try and create room in those tanks to harvest rainwater. So we probably were over-irrigating, but our study wasn't evaluating necessarily the efficiency of the system, but to demonstrate which spacings would and depths would work well.
Do you think your data would be somewhat different if you did not have any rain during the summer and you were using just simply city water?
The question was, would we see different results from using city water versus using harvested rainwater? And a water analysis showed that our harvested rainwater was not significantly different for what we were finding from normal, say, groundwater for irrigation or surface water. And we also conducted a test on the electrical conductivity from near the emitter to between emitters, and we saw no correlation with solutes between emitters from that wetting front.
I'm sorry, what I meant was, if you were doing this and you didn't have any rain event, in other words, your plots would not have received any rainwater.
Okay.
During the summer, you didn't have any rain at all. And of course, you don't have harvested rainwater either, so you would have another source, whatever. How do you think that would differ? In other words, what I'm saying, after each rain, did you see a major difference between the plots 2 days later?
So the question, kind of two parts there. Would we see a difference if we never received rainfall? And also, you know, what did it look like directly after rainfall? And for the second part of that, the 61 centimeter spacing where we saw a lot of that striping shortly after a substantial rainfall, they would look very similar to all of the other plots. And the control plots would take longer to recover. And would our system have look differently in results if we wouldn't receive rainfall? That's possible. I don't know, because that didn't occur. Although we're hopefully trying to simulate that during those 4 or 5 week drought periods where we weren't receiving rainfall.
Okay, let's thank Brad.